Hey guys, welcome to our group coaching call, momentum call for July 24th. It's great to be here with you guys. I know Jessica is going to be joining us a little late, but I see Jack here. I see Blake, and I think that must be Chris. Awesome. So you guys are here, and Jessica will be joining us in about 30 minutes or so. Like to go around the room, the virtual room, and start with our usual question. I would love to hear about your win of the week. Anything, again, a win is just really progress, however you define it. You're making progress. Anything you feel really good about, just type in the chat area. In the chat box if you're on the call page, just let me know W:, so I know that's what it is, and just share it with us for the group. Let's start on a positive note. Chris says, I got a new client with a new LinkedIn prospecting method. That's fantastic. Man, I'd love to hear more about that, and I know everyone else would love it as well, so maybe you can, if you're willing, when we get to the Q&A and discussions, give us a kind of a basic rundown of how that went down, maybe lessons learned. Awesome. Thanks, Chris. All right. Jack says, win of the week, I have a meeting Friday with content manager for the Ask Method company. Man, moving right along with that. That's fantastic, Jack. Great to hear that that's still a possibility. Good stuff. Let's see. High hopes. Yes, for sure. All right. And what about you, Blake? I know you had a challenging week. I think it was the week before that. Lost an anchor client. But would love to hear if you feel like you're making progress somewhere. Anything stand out as kind of a good thing? All right, Blake says, just finished the LinkedIn prospecting class. Good stuff, yeah. I'm glad you went through that. Love to for you to give that a try. I'm trying this with a couple of different groups. It's something, like I mentioned, I've been doing in my own business for about 3 months now, very successfully, and I'm adapting it for you guys. So, but it's still in beta mode. Would love to get feedback. Specifically in two things, how it's working, as you're doing it, what are you finding works better for you or it's not working better for you, and questions that you're adding to the swipe file that I included there. So kind of the neutral questions, any kind of question that seems to be working well for you. What tends to happen is you experiment with a few, and then you settle on a couple a different questions. So would love to beef up that swipe file that I started for you guys. All right, one more thing. Would love to know what you're working on right now. So just let me know what project training within the program you are either going through or implementing right now. Just let me know in the chat area. What are you working on in terms of your game plan? Chris is currently doing LinkedIn prospecting. No training at this time. Okay, cool. And by the way, so if you guys want to discuss, we'll talk about a couple things today, but game plan. I also included or pointed you guys to this ROI maximizer today. If you haven't had a chance to go through it, don't worry. We just posted it. I wanted to make you guys aware of it, but would love to discuss that as well, and I'll point you guys to it if you haven't seen it. Blake says, same as Chris, so we're going to LinkedIn prospecting. Good stuff. Jack says, I was away last week. This week, I want to dig into grow, optimize operations. Fantastic, Jack. So yeah, let's talk. If you want some suggestions on what would make the most sense, let's have a conversation. There's a lot in that particular area of the training portal. All right, guys. So let's go ahead and start some discussions here. If you have a question, just let me know by raising your hand, star two. If you want to have a chat, I'll unmute you. That will let me know that you're on the phone and want to talk. Or you can always type in a question either in the question field or the chat field. I've been trying to stay away from the chat field for questions, but really there's not too many of us here, so it's easy to manage. So whatever you prefer, I'm good there. And let me just go here. I saw Blake had submitted some questions, so we will start with Blake. And let's see. Okay, so Blake started, he submitted a few questions. I'll go back and forth here. Blake says, what do we do with the ROI Maximizer worksheet when we've completed it? Do we share it with you for an individual chat? So a couple of things. I think the biggest value of going through this is really more of a self-assessment, is giving you focus and clarity. I find that, you know, when you start working on improving your business, and guys, I mean, I do the same thing you do. So I'm in your shoes pretty much every year. I'm constantly investing in coaching, training, consulting. And I find that it's very easy to kind of get lost in the details, get lost in kind of the day-to-day work, and then lose track of your progress, lose track of what you're supposed to do next, and get clarity on those next steps and focus. So this is a really good exercise to give you that clarity, and it's something I suggest you start looking at every month. So at the beginning, first week of every month, just take a look at it. So we're kind of, you know, here at the end of July. I would say first week of September or end of August, go back to it and ask yourself the same questions. And then if you want to go through any of this with me, let me know. Let's talk about it here. Let me know in the forum, especially you know, where you need my help. Toward the end, one of the questions was, you know, where do I need help from Ed? So let me know where I can support you there. But the biggest benefit, again, Blake, is just giving you that clarity and make sure you take that moment to step away from the situation and assess. Blake also says, I'm ramping up my LinkedIn prospecting. How do I narrow down the prospects? I'll work with virtually any high-tech company, but when I search LinkedIn, I get 2 million marketing directors. Yeah, absolutely. So here's what I suggest, and Chris is doing something similar. You'll get overwhelmed very, very quickly when there are so many potential prospects. The biggest challenge is, where do I start? I suggest taking kind of a vertical approach to this. So start with a sector. Do one sector at a time and do that for a couple of weeks and then move to a different sector. Or you can stay there if you want. So if you wanted to go into cloud computing, for instance, just really hone in on cloud computing. And, you know, even then, it doesn't narrow your field that much. I mean, you're still probably talking about, you know, several thousand marketing directors or companies. But that really helps give you a little bit more focus, number one. And then number two, you can even narrow it down further if you wanted to. And you know, maybe put some other criteria there in terms of location, in terms of company size, et cetera, to narrow down further. So honestly, it doesn't matter. You could do just as well, Blake, just starting, you know, this hypothetical 2 million, just starting at the top and getting through whatever you can get through, which might be, you know, 100 of them. But I find that keeping that focus and going vertical is going to reduce the anxiety and give you some economies of scale too, because when you're focusing in a particular sector, There are things you might be looking for, things you might say that are unique to that sector. In terms of what sector to pick, you know, how do you make that criteria? How do you make the selection criteria? And I'll tell you what I told Chris is start with those where you've had some experience. So, you know, I just use cloud computing. If I've written for some cloud computing clients, you know, that would be a very natural place to go to, because you have something to tell. You have something you can say as you engage them in conversation. Let me know if that helps. But, that's the way I would go about it. Then Blake also says, the only thing left on my current plan is LinkedIn. Is it time for me to start another component of the training? Blake, let's talk about it. Yeah, it depends. So if you want, let's go ahead and have a chat today and figure out where you are, and I'll pull up your game plan and let's figure out what makes sense here. All right, Chris has his hand raised. Let me bring you in. Hey, Chris, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Ed.
Awesome. So what's cooking?
This morning, first of all, you wanted to chat about the client, the new client.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting because many times as I've listened to your training, I've heard you say, you know, there's that 3% when they're ready to do something. And I happened to hit one of those 3%. And I had made the connection, and then I asked her a question. I don't remember specifically which one it was, on LinkedIn, and we started a conversation. And the whole key, I think, to it was she needed help right then. She is the head of content for a big BI company, which is wonderful. She didn't need help at that company, but she also runs an agency. So through the agency, I may get access to additional people in the industry that I wouldn't have access to otherwise, because apparently knows a lot of people in that industry. So hopefully
Great.
That will end up being a good contact.
That's fantastic. Love it. Yeah, it's right. It's so much of this is a numbers game. What I love about the LinkedIn approach is that for the 97% who don't have something now or in the next 90 days, you're now connected. You know what I'm saying? Like with email, it's kind of like a one-shot deal. And you can go back,
right.
And I do suggest you go back. But in here, at least there's some kind of breadcrumb trail. There's some kind of connection that you can continue to tap. So that's great.
I like it a lot. I love the fact too. It's not quite as pushy is not right the right word, but it's a little more of a relationship nurturing type of process. And I agree with what you said earlier. It takes longer to do it, and I'm only on like halfway through most of the people I've spoken with, so I've still got a ways to go. But I think it's working a lot better for me and in the industry that I'm in than even the warm email was.
Great. Love it. Love it. Great to hear. Thanks for sharing that. Well, I'm curious when, in terms of the chat itself, like how anything in particular you saw, like when did she turn into – well, you know, tell me more about what you do because I may have something. You know, when did the conversation shift?
Well, she's a veteran marketer, so she jumped to that almost immediately. She asked me probably within the first few back and forth comments, do you write long form content?
Yeah.
And then it kind of went from there because she had a need.
Perfect. Yeah, that's what you're looking for. You're if this didn't come across, guys, that the one thing that you're trying to do is, like a chess master, move your piece to a point when then they're asking you something. You know, when they're either asking you something or admitting pain or need of some kind. You know what I'm saying? Like, they just start saying, you know, we got this problem and we're trying to get this done and that, and that's awesome. When suddenly they spill the beans, that you know that you're in a really good place.
Yeah, I agree. So you
good
ready
stuff.
For my question?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So this morning I listened to your podcast with Jennifer Gregory and her Audience First Method. And as I was driving to work, it made me start thinking about the next group of companies I want to prospect after I'm done with the business intelligence and analytics. And my next thought was, I've worked in the construction industry and IT for 17 years. So why not look at companies that use the audience first method to identify products and services that, as far as software goes, that construction companies use.
Mm-hmm.
Does that kind of make sense as far as a good next group?
I think you kind of did what I did, because I had a similar experience in that my last employer was actually a construction software company. So it wasn't – I had stayed away from it because when I was doing this on the side, I didn't want to risk running into companies that competed with my employer.
Right.
But once I went solo, I started going after that sector. And, I ended up getting a couple of clients, one through Warren Memel Prospecting, and then my employer a year later hired me to write actually quite a bit. They ended up being a very profitable client. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, assuming that you enjoy it, that you like it, there's lots of possibilities there. As you know, it's kind of a limited field. There's been a lot of consolidation in the industry in terms of tech, but I mean, the adoption curve in construction has been fantastic because they've been slow to adopt, generally speaking.
Yeah. Well, too, and I keep seeing companies like the drone manufacturers, and I even recently did a report for my day job on augmented VR. So that was something else. There's some software companies there I might be able to talk to.
Well, and you have a great story to tell there, right, because of your experience in both IT and construction.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah,
the need.
I love it. You absolutely do. Absolutely do. So it's, I think that makes perfect sense.
Well, thank you.
Go for it. Yeah. So, you know, one thing I wanted to highlight here with Chris is talking about is the audience first method that he's referring to. I just did a podcast with Jennifer Gregory on this. The whole idea is actually very, very simple. I can't believe I didn't think of it. She came up with the concept is you brainstorm where the money is being spent. So in other words, what companies, what purchases are being made, and then you work backwards from there, and then you start looking for companies in those various sectors of that industry. And what it solves is the problem of who do I call on, you know, what prospects. Many people they can find their target market relatively easy, but then figuring out what companies to go after, what prospects to target, that's where they have trouble, and this is what this solves. It's just a very simple step-by-step method of, and like Chris said, you know, he just figured out, well, wait a minute, I'm in IT and I work for a construction company. What about construction software? So that's the whole idea. Good stuff. Thanks, Chris. Yeah, definitely want to chat with you. If I know you mentioned this in the forum about the ROI maximizer and what you uncovered there. Okay, so I'll come back to you for that if you want to chat.
Sure. That sounds good.
All right, let's see, Jack. Jack, hey, how's it going, man?
Hey, Ed, good. How you doing?
Doing well. What's cooking?
I was away most of last week, so I'm kind of catching up. But you know, I was thinking about Yeah, I've been doing the LinkedIn prospecting, conforming. I started it before I went away, conforming to your new program. And I like the feel of that so far very much. You start imagining all these things. Maybe I'm doing this wrong, or maybe I'm doing that wrong. And I'm wondering if I'm too hesitant to go for a meeting. I don't really take that many meetings, or I'm fine with the relationship building. That seems to go okay, but. I'm wondering if I should be more aggressive about going for meetings earlier in the conversation, or should I wait until the time seems right for the prospect?
Yeah, it's a great question, Jack. Here's what I have found, and I make this mistake quite a bit. I have to catch myself and kind of regroup. I would err on the side of not asking for the meeting too early and just waiting. Because it's like dating, right? It's God help me if I have to get back in the dating scene.
It's been a while for me, so go slow here.
But if you were to meet, this lady at Starbucks, you don't want to go too fast and try to ask her out on a date too early in the conversation, right? So it would be the same thing, and that's what I try to remind myself of, is I'm tempted to kind of like, okay, let's get this thing moving and is it yes or no? Yes or no being, do we want to engage? Do we want to take it to the next step and have a conversation? But it's better to take it slower, even if that means it's going to take longer and you're going to have more people to follow up with, because the results are going to be better. So if they haven't gone there yet, if they haven't really kind of opened up and started either talking about maybe where they're having challenges or what they're doing, or like in Chris's case, just flat out ask you, hey, do you write long form content? Because we're going to have some needs coming up, or we have a need right now. Then you want to keep that conversation going until they start heading in that direction, and that's just going to take a little longer. So don't worry about the fact that, gosh, this is kind of taking a long time. Maybe I should press for the phone conversation. Just hold off.
That was kind of my instinct, but I just wanted to make sure I'm not just, being a slacker and not trying to go for it a little bit sooner. And I'm also careful about documenting what I'm doing. I'm using the HubSpot CRM, so that takes a little time. But at least I have everybody on there, and I know the conversations that I've had and who to follow up on and when. So that's very helpful, but... In the back of my mind, I worry about, am I spending too much time on the technical end of the follow-up and not enough time just saying, hey, let's go out on a date kind of thing, I think your advice is sound, and I'm glad to hear you say that, because that's kind of the way I intuitively felt about it, that I should not be too anxious, and I should wait for the relationship to mature a little bit and... until the person feels comfortable with me.
Yeah, I would say, and I need to figure out the average, but just in looking at some of, in my business, how many interactions it takes to kind of get to that next step and start discussing how I could help them, very common for it to take 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Before we're talking about that, and then it's usually 2 or 3 more before it kind of ends, either
right.
Because they're not ready now, not interested, or they want to go ahead and move forward and work with me.
Gotcha.
So it's you mentioned CRM. Here's what I would say. That's completely up to you. I've opted to keep it really, really simple and not do a contact management system for this right now. Instead, what I'm using is just my inbox in LinkedIn. And I just kind of go through it every couple of days and see if it's been a while since I've heard from, you know, someone. And, you know, I may follow back up. But for the most part, I'm just using that. You're just going to have to see what's best for you. If you find that it's better to spend the extra time documenting and keeping track of everybody in a separate system, or if it's better to just, you know, kind of keep it low key and scrappy and, hey, you know, if they don't really respond or it just kind of dies, then that's okay. I'm not gonna take the time, you know.
Yeah, so that sounds like a good idea. So when a relationship kind of is not going anywhere, and you make a decision to put them on a follow up list for you know, every month or two, how do you track that? Do you do it through an email marketing management system or spreadsheet, or how do you do that?
Here's what I've decided to do, and so far it's working well for me. Now, I to be honest, I haven't tried another method so I could have a real comparison.
Yeah.
I've opted for not necessarily following up. So here's what happens. I start trying to see if they'll play ball and engage them with neutral questions, right? So I just follow this process. Yeah. And if at any point, especially early on in the process, if they become unresponsive, so for instance, one of my questions is, what types of clients do you work with? If they become unresponsive, what I've opted to do is just to not even follow up. Might seem silly, but I'm working the numbers right now rather than trying to build follow up into the process. So I'd rather try more people and free up the time from following up to try more people and try to engage more conversations with more people than to limit the number of people and then just spend the time just following up with those who don't respond. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Now, if somebody does express interest, but you can tell it's not the right time for them for whatever reason, maybe that's the time to go with the CRM.
Yes.
Track those kind of
yeah,
people.
Absolutely. That's different because that's kind of like that's one of the key triggers. So if it's yes, might be interested at some point, but not right now, then you know you have a prospect. Now they have to move. They're now at a there should be part of your nurturing bucket or your nurturing list.
Yeah.
And I can show you where you can go to. I got some training specifically on that, by the way, Jack, like how to stay in touch with those people.
Okay.
But I was referring to before that. Let's say you're just, you know, going through some of these questions to see if they engage, and, you know, at some point they just don't respond.
Right.
Then I've opted for not, hey, you know, just checking in and then asking another question to see if I can kind of wake them up. I've opted not to do that because I'd rather at that point just at least we're connected in LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And then what I'm hoping for is that the re-engagement will come from seeing some of my stuff or maybe occasionally commenting, you know, in some of the stuff they post or share.
Yeah, that would save me a good bit of time on the CRM.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no right or wrong, but
right.
I do think that the time you spend, right, because you have you're constrained by time.
Right.
So I'd rather take that time, let's just say that added 4 hours a month when you added, when you add it all up, it's 4 extra hours a month just tracking it. And following up, I'd rather spend those 4 hours just trying to engage with more prospects.
Yeah.
And when you know, talking earlier with Chris, when you realize that you know, 3% is on the extreme. I'd like to use 10%. When only 10% of prospects are actively looking or might be in the next 90 days, so kind of an immediate need people, then, you know, the numbers don't really work in your favor.
Right.
Yeah, great stuff, guys. So, you know, the whole point here is you're going to have to make a decision what to do. I suggest starting with, you know, not tracking until they get to a point where they've raised their hand, identified themselves as someone who, yes, they would be a prospect, they just don't have something right now. Then that's different, because at that point they move to your nurturing list. Okay. Hey, Jessica, welcome. I see that you just joined us. Chris says he's been using a Google spreadsheet to track this stuff. So, you know, that's one way you can keep it super, super simple for sure. And he also said narrowing down the list of companies that get content marketing was really helpful, which is, yeah, absolutely. The tricky thing about that is sometimes you don't know. I think with practice, you'll be able to tell. But there are companies out there, they get it. They do content marketing, but you wouldn't really know for sure by looking at their website, because maybe a lot of the content they have is gated or hidden, or they only use it once a prospect engages with them. So it's hard to tell, but you also have to use a little bit of common sense. So, for instance, I had someone ask me about, well, he's focused on medical devices, the medical device industry, and he said, you know, I can't really tell, looking at some of these companies, which ones really get it or not. And my response was like, look, there are some industries like technology, financial services, especially the higher end stuff there, medical devices, medical equipment, healthcare, that are kind of no-brainers, right? These are the industries that they're using content marketing. So even if you can't really tell, if it's kind of borderline, if it's one of those industries, I would err on the side of, hey, they get it. The exception might be if they're a startup, because those can be very difficult to work with. They may still not get it. They might be in an industry that absolutely gets it and uses content marketing, but if they're a startup, funding is going to be a problem, budget, and difficult people to work with, because the CEO, you know, thinks she knows everything and wants to write her own stuff, and that can be a bit of a nightmare. Okay, so star two, guys, if you have a question. I'm also going to go back, because I know Blake had submitted a few questions here before. I think I answered a few. Let me go to... Okay, cool. Let me see. Blake said, as I mentioned, one of my best clients went out of business. They were an agency. One of the clients reached out to me to cancel a meeting. Should I tell them about the situation and offer my services to complete the project? How about all the other clients I've worked for? Okay. That's a good question, Blake. The first thing I would look at is your agreement with a client, if you had one. In terms of, a lot of this could be void now that they're out of business, but you just want to make sure and look at non-compete and make sure that reaching out to their clients that you've worked with and have a relationship with wouldn't be an issue. I don't think it would, but, you know, that the agreement is always the final word on that. But, I it sounds like it might be way to turn lemons into lemonade. I hate that happened. It does happen. I remember when I lost my biggest client, it was a huge anchor client, in 2008, as we were heading into financial collapse in this country. It was very, very difficult. I was already losing business everywhere else, and then this client was always steady, had been for 3 years. Because of the business that I had lost, they had turned into a higher and higher percentage, about half my income, and suddenly, boom, they didn't go out of business. but they shut down so many different things. They froze spending in all these areas, including content marketing. And, yeah, half my income gone. Very, very difficult. I totally get it. I went through like 3 or 4 months of just – I was in a serious funk. The good news is when I came back quickly. It was overnight, and it couldn't have been a better situation. So, you know, let's work together to make sure you don't go through 3 or 4 months of that, that you can replace this as quickly as possible. But just know that, man, I feel for you. That's that can be difficult for sure. Blake also asks, are you all using a paid version of LinkedIn? Is that much better than the free version? All right, so let me know in the chat area what you guys are using, if you have a premium or free, and if you have premium, which level you're on. I use, I think it's called Business Premium, Business Plus, or Business Premium. It's the middle one. I want to say it's like $60 a month. It's got... The cool thing about going with premium, Blake, is that, sure, it's not cheap, but they've taken so much out of the free version now, and there's so many limits on the free version that, you know, you almost, if you're going to be serious about this, you almost have to go premium. You're going to hit your commercial search limit very quickly otherwise. And you're limited as to the search capabilities, dramatically limited. For a long, long time, LinkedIn was giving way too much in the free version. The pendulum swung the other way. Sales Navigator, which is kind of the top tier, is $80 a month, I believe. And the cool thing about that, it's got even more granular search capabilities, and it's got a built-in CRM function to it, which, by the way, you know, something I didn't mention when Jack and I were talking about tracking the stuff in CRM, that might be another option to consider, that, you know, it's all built in. You don't have to leave LinkedIn to now enter a new prospect into HubSpot and track it there. I went ahead and I totally had Business Premium recently. I went ahead and upgraded to Sales Navigator. But the reason I didn't mention that is I haven't really played with it. I've been meaning to go in there and start playing with the CRM capabilities, because one of the things I'm very interested in doing is being able to do a very granular search and then save my search and then track leads that way, because I don't want to go to a different system to track all that stuff. And I don't necessarily want to track leads. I just want to track who I've already contacted and maybe something about, you know, where they are or what they said. That would save me some time, as opposed to having to run these searches over and over again. So I need to do that. I just haven't done it. But it's, yeah, I'm using the paid. Chris says he uses Sales Navigator. Jessica says she's using the Business Premium right now. But I like the sales one more and may switch back soon. I'm using a premium business. Jack is using premium business. So, yeah, it looks like everyone's on the premium version, Blake. Chris says, if a prospect doesn't connect on LinkedIn, would you recommend eventually, about 2 weeks, canceling the connection request and trying again in a few weeks, or should we just move on? You know, That's an interesting thought. Is, you know, would it make sense to cancel the connection request and try again? So at least, you know, it's not sitting there gathering dust. I really don't know what to recommend, Chris. Let me think here. If we're going by this idea that, look, the whole thing is just to kind of move on and to work the numbers rather than try to optimize some of these steps, then I would just move on. But if you're going after kind of a smaller sector, more niched sector of the industry. Let's just take construction software. There are only there's a finite number of viable prospects in that industry, and you know, I don't know the number, but let's just say that it's 300. That's quite a few, but it's still finite. It's not like business intelligence or analytics. It's much bigger than that. Then in those cases, it might make sense, I think, to go a little bit, to put a little bit more effort into it because there's only so many. And I think it could make sense. Now, I saw a stat recently that most people log into LinkedIn only about every 2 weeks or so. So keep that in mind. Just because it's been a couple of weeks doesn't mean they're not interested. It just means that they're not logging in there like they do Facebook. Facebook is a totally different animal when it comes to that. The engagement there is much, much higher than in LinkedIn. LinkedIn has definitely come a long way in that department, but it's still, by its very nature, not something people spend all day in. So if I were you, if you're going to try this, I would say more like 3 weeks. That's going to be a better bet if you want to give it a try. Okay, let's see. We got Jack with his hand raised. Hey, Jack. How's it going?
Is that me?
Yeah. I didn't know if you'd raised your hand. It came in as raised, but
I clicked it to lower my hand, so that
okay, gotcha.
I didn't intend to raise my hand. Sorry.
No worries. Hey, but that actually reminds me, guys. I wanted to let you know. Starting next week, and I'll send out an email. Crystal and I will send an email about this probably on Monday next week. We're going to be moving these calls to Zoom. Been experimenting with Zoom in a couple of different ways, and I think it's going to be a much better platform to do these calls in. It'll enable us to do some better things. It's going to be less confusing. The interface is much better. So just know we're going to be, next time we talk, it's going to be in a different platform. And there won't be two places to ask questions or to chat. That's limited to one, which is great. That's going to avoid a lot of confusion. This hand raise thing and this teleseminar service is not the best. It served us well, but we've outgrown it. All right. I'm curious if anyone's had a chance to go through the ROI Maximizer and curious what you've uncovered. So that's something that I'd love to hear from you guys on. I know I just posted it this morning. We've created a new area in the training portal called Snackables, and the whole idea behind Snackables, these are quick, short trainings or material that I want to post for you guys. It doesn't really belong somewhere else, either because it's short or because it's in a totally different area. But I'll be posting in that Snackables area, and that's where I have this one. And if you haven't gone through it, don't worry. I know it's very last minute, but I urge you to give it 20, 30 minutes sometime this week. Go through it. Again, I think it's going to give you some really good clarity, and then we can have a discussion either in these calls or in the forum about how we can help you move forward, get momentum, start making progress or even more progress than you're making right now. All right, we got Chris here. Hey, Chris, you're on.
Okay. Well, you're talking about the ROI Maximizer. And
yeah.
I made a lot of notes. Is there anything in particular that you would like to find out what I wrote?
Well, the one area that I'd love to hear from you guys on is help from me. You know, where do you need help? And then give me some context based on what you uncovered that led to that request, right, and based on some of the other boxes.
Okay. Well, for mine, as I mentioned on the Facebook group, I didn't really have any struggles per se. I mean, there's the generic finding better clients, but I think we all have that. So One of the thoughts I had was, I'm spending most of my prospecting business development time on the LinkedIn method and going through my spreadsheet and doing all the messaging that we've discussed. Should I add other methods outside of that LinkedIn prospecting, or should I just focus on that right now? I guess is really my question.
Gotcha. Yeah. Good question. So I'm curious, what did you go through? No, I don't think I assigned this to you in the game plan, which is developing a prospecting plan, because I think you had already been doing warm email prospecting and you had some momentum there. And my thought process was, you know, keep doing what you're doing. You've added LinkedIn since then. So you haven't really added anything else, correct?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. So here's something that might help you. I find with prospecting and marketing, there are a few things that are sure bets, meaning, man, you just can't go wrong. And if you need to generate activity quickly, you know, these are things that are going to work. They have a high probability of working. And of course, one of them is warm email prospecting. The second one is LinkedIn, especially with a specific process. Everything else is not that it won't work or won't work as well. It's just that the variability is higher, or the time and energy required to implement it is risky when you compare it to the potential benefit, you know, in terms. So that's why I didn't, you know, in your case, I didn't give you this. But there, I have some training where I walk you through, I think it's 18 different methods to consider, and then the pros and cons of each. And then I give you a decision framework to end up with a very basic prospecting plan that includes what you're doing now, but might also include one or two other strategies. And the whole idea is to end up with your whole plan in an index card.
Okay.
And I think you're at a point, because you're already doing this thing. It's now in what I call the habit stage, meaning you're not learning necessarily anything new. You're now just deploying, right? So it's now kind of like a daily or weekly thing.
Correct.
I really think it would make sense. Yeah. So that's going to be, let me go to the training portal. And it's under market, develop a plan. And I'll go there right now and tell you exactly where it is. Market, develop a plan, and how to create your marketing plan. It's the first one there on the top left.
Okay.
And what that will do, again, it's a decision framework. Then everything else in terms of what you decide, for the most part, the training on, okay, well, I want to add, you know, like a thought leadership strategy, or maybe start a newsletter. Then I have training on those specific things. But the first step is just to figure out, okay, what should the plan be? What else, if anything, should I add to the mix?
All right, sounds good.
Yeah, and I think from an outbound standpoint, you might be okay with what you have. Where this might help you is in figuring out if maybe kind of an inbound ingredient would make sense. In other words, just kind of getting some content out there that will attract or help attract some prospects to your website that can then turn into an inquiry.
You know, I've been thinking more since I'm spending a lot of time on LinkedIn doing the prospecting method. I'm wondering if it makes sense to do maybe a few times a week, create a post, like, you know, 200-300 words type of helpful post, and essentially so that the people that have connected, they'll see some activity on their timeline, et cetera. at least hopefully, after I post that. So it'll help them become familiar with me as I go through the process of asking them the questions.
Absolutely. That makes perfect sense. I suspect you're going to end up with that as kind of an early version of your inbound strategy. I would still go through this just so you kind of get a lay of the land and make a really good decision you feel good about. But that is a natural next step. There's actually two facets of that, Chris. One is you're going to want to like and comment on some of their stuff without being obnoxious. You know, there's a fine line there. And then it's also posting some good stuff out there. Because when you engage with them and then they engage with you, there's a higher probability that they will see your stuff.
Right.
That LinkedIn will figure that, you know, it does make sense for them to see your stuff, so they're going to go ahead and expose it, and vice versa. That absolutely makes perfect sense. And then with content, one thing that I would recommend, because a lot of people get freaked out with the, but what do I create? I urge you to be very strategic with content. Think in terms of writing once and publishing multiple times.
Okay.
Right. So start brainstorming article and content ideas. And keep a central list somewhere that you can keep adding to. And as you see prospects asking you questions, or as you see in social media, especially in LinkedIn, Content Marketing Institute, et cetera, you start looking at other ideas, posts that are being published, questions that people are asking, comments in posts and in groups, et cetera, you'll start seeing opportunities for content. And keep feeding your master list. And then the whole idea, Chris, is you want to take it from just a list of brainstorm ideas to some really short abstracts that you can then flesh out into short articles. And then some of those you can splinter off into just social media blurbs. You could repurpose some of those into other types of content. And so on and so forth. So basically, one idea can be turned into 3, 4, 5 different pieces of content.
Yeah, one of the things that on a previous coaching, I worked with someone, and they had, it was called Authority Q&A, and their focus is essentially what you're talking about, is you go through and you answer people's questions, you put them in a Word or whatever type of document, and as this document grows and you organize it, then that becomes great fodder for, as you said, social media or blog posts or ebooks or whatever, as that document continues to grow.
Exactly. But just because you've published one of them as a social media post doesn't mean you can't turn that into an article also.
Absolutely.
You know, or that you can't record a quick 2-minute screencast video with the same content, you know, and post it somewhere, either on your blog or even, you should never do one place, your blog, LinkedIn, some other platform, etc. People always assume, especially writers, that, well, once you have it out there in some format, then that's it. That's the end of the line. And that's not true at all. I mean, you wouldn't believe how much content I repurpose. I was really shy about it. I'm telling you, every time I repurpose something, same content for the most part, but in a different format, I get comments from people saying, "Ed, this is great. I never thought about this. What a great idea." And then I chuckle because it's not that I'm trying to trick anyone. It's just I've published this idea 3 times before, but number one, some time has elapsed between them, and number two, it's in a different format.
Sure.
Nobody has ever said, "Oh, I remember you published this last year as an article." I feel duped. Never happens.
Yeah, I like that idea a lot.
Yeah, so just to heads up, and for all you guys, if as you start thinking about creating content, if that's going to be something that's going to be part of your marketing plan, think of it in those terms. Don't not do inbound marketing and thought leadership because you think it's overwhelming or a big commitment. I would also say this. Your content doesn't have to be mind-blowing, and your articles don't need to be very long at all. I have a coaching client. Actually, she went through the Truex Project a couple years ago. Her newsletter is every 4 to 6 weeks, which means that she's not committing to a certain date, and I think that's great. Every 4 to 6 weeks. Her articles, I want to say, are about 100 words long. And it's based on something that happened in her personal life, like she and her family went on a trip, and they had this experience, and then this is the lesson there for marketers or for content creators. She's always on the lookout for lessons from everyday life. So it's relatable, because she's talking about something that happened on her trip that, we can all relate to. And then she's extracting the lesson. And I'm telling you, it's 100 words, 150 words tops. And then at the end, she might post a link to a recent project she completed. In many cases, there are websites. She does a lot of websites in the hospitality industry. And it's brilliant. That's all it is. Keep in mind that the biggest benefit of a newsletter or in publishing content is not to blow people away with your ideas. It's to keep your name in front of them. If your newsletter is landed in somebody's inbox and they see your name, it's done its job. Okay. If you post something in LinkedIn and somebody has seen it who's a prospect, it's done its job. It's not about the content itself. It's really a delivery mechanism for your name. I guess that's really a nice way to put it. Think of content as a delivery mechanism for Chris Hardy, just a reminder to people that you exist. And what happens is you'd be surprised once you have, you're making these connections out there, or in the case of a newsletter, you have a few subscribers, you'd be surprised how often people write to you, they haven't even read it, and will just reply to your newsletter and say, "Hey, Chris, great to see this in my inbox today. You know what? This made me think of something we might need your help with." It wasn't about the content. It was just the fact that you just reminded them you exist. All right.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Great. Good stuff. So, yeah, go through that, Chris, and then let me know what you end up deciding there for your prospecting plan.
Will do.
All right, Jack. Now, I see your hand raised now. Is this a false alarm, or did you really raise it?
Maybe yeah, this is – no, are you there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. No, this, I really wanted to speak again. The ROI maximizer. I had heard the term gamification and just sort of vaguely knew about it, but I never dug into it. But as I was working through yours, I found it very helpful, and I can see how at least two clients could use this to great advantage in what they're doing. Especially the simple way that you put it out there, and I'd always thought of it as kind of an app developer might do.
Uh-huh.
But I see you don't have to do that. So I'm wondering if you have any resources you could point us to learn more about this, about gamification as something that's, in a simple way. You could do it in a simple way.
Ooh, good question. So I wrote a white paper for a client on this several years ago, and there's a lot out there on it. But I don't, there wasn't one place that had everything.
Okay.
If you just type in gamification in business, for instance, you'll find tons of resources. I think some of the best, most interesting stuff, though, comes from couple of authorities. One is, I think his name is BJ Fogg. Have you heard of? He's an
no.
professor in Stanford.
No.
He's considered to be kind of one of the experts, BJ, and it's F-O-G-G. If you research, he's got a website and he's got some great stuff. It's really all centered on behavioral science, right? Because that's really what gamification is. It's, you know, how do we change people's behavior by giving them a different type of motivation, something that's actually going to drive the action that they want to do, something they're motivated in doing. So either we're doing it artificially, maybe at first it's going to be artificial, but then you're developing the habit in a stealthy kind of way, which then that's what's going to make it automatic. So it starts with you're just trying to figure out what's going to get them to take the first few actions that will then develop the behavior, which will then become automatic.
Yeah.
So if you, it's his website is behaviormodel.org.
Okay.
Some really good stuff there. And then have you read The Power of Habit, the book?
I have not.
Excellent, excellent resource. If you like that kind of, I'm fascinated by behavioral science, social psychology. If you like stuff from like Malcolm Gladwell, you know, that kind of writing, it is right up that alley. It's fantastic. And he really digs deep. And of course he names a lot of different resources there. But it's just a fascinating look at how habits shape us. And my conclusion there was, we're just a bundle of habits. I mean, that's all we are. It's really the way we're designed, and it's an adaptive nature, a way for the brain essentially to save energy. It tries to do things on autopilot because it just doesn't. If you have to make a decision on everything, it would require way too much cognitive energy and fuel, if you will.
Right.
So. Yeah, I think those two resources will give you plenty.
Okay.
And then, again, just searching for gamification on the web in business, well, that will give you is kind of the practical application and how different companies are using it.
Okay.
Where I found it was in, I think I mentioned this in the video, health and wellness. Trying to get people who wouldn't change their habits, their eating or exercise habits, even if their life was at stake, but if there was a game involved, as silly as it sounds, suddenly things change. I found that to be fascinating.
That may have been what triggered it, because one of my clients is a health and wellness guy, and he's trying to position himself as being not just a guy selling supplements, but a PhD who can assess your current health and recommend what you should be doing. And one of my early suggestions was to publish additional content to give them little suggestions, you know, not change their life or make them change their entire diet, but just put some helpful things out there, one little thing they could do, you know, walk around the block 3 days a week, you know, to get started on your exercise program. And I think I think that for him, this could be a gold mine of just making sure the consumption step of your business, that he's covering that. The gamification would be perfect for that.
It sounds like it would be, for sure.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's like badges, medals, scores. It turns into a competition. And what my client was doing was something similar, in that they were trying to get people in a company to compete. Now, they weren't competing against each other directly. The whole concept was you have certain goals to meet for yourself. You have to get your cholesterol to this level, resting pulse rate, weight, body mass, whatever. But there was like a delta, right? You were at A and your goal was B. So it was, you know, how quickly can you get to B? That was where you're competing. But based on that, you would earn badges and medals and so forth. So everyone's competing to get to their level, but you know, everyone then is also competing to earn these badges and points and
right.
medals and so forth. So,
right.
Yeah, there was department competitions and then company, you know, overall company. It's fascinating. I just did a search for BJ Fogg gamification,
yeah.
and it turned up something about his behavioral model that includes some stuff on gamification too. So yeah,
okay, that's helpful.
Yeah.
And by the way, I wrote down your sentence to keep content as a delivery mechanism for your name. That's a great one.
Yeah, right? Thank you. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So once you give this some more thought, Jack, and you know, to everybody, just let me know where I can help. I think the two biggest things is, again, for ROI Maximizer is to give you clarity, keep you on track, make sure you don't get lost in the forest, and also to help you pinpoint exactly where I can help you. Because what I don't want is for you to feel like, I know I need help, but can you help me? Okay, well, we need to narrow that down, you know, like where exactly. So that's why it's toward the end, because once you've kind of narrowed things down, then you know, okay, this is where I can do some things, but here's where I need your help. All right. Let me bring Jessica in. Hold on. Jessica. Here you go. Hey, Jessica. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. You had a good client call?
Yeah. It's the one that contacted me for articles. It was our kickoff call.
Oh, good.
So we went through the process and everything, and he just sent me over to the initial two articles, which will be basically a test. And then assuming those go well, then we're good to go.
Fantastic. That's great. So what can I help you with today?
So I went through the ROI exercise today. And the things that I'm struggling with are, you know, bandwidth, which is also partially finding subcontractor to help with bandwidth. And then just the strengthening my processes and to have a solid, stable base, because everything's changing so rapidly that I need to work on that. So I'm not doing any training right now. I've completed the training that's in my lessons plan. But I didn't really have anything specific. So my next steps that I had were, you know, I have to choose my VA this week. I need to onboard them and move off some stuff to them right away to give me more time. I need to find a subcontractor. And I think I'm going to focus more on white papers. They're a lot less labor intensive than I may have expected, and they pay more, and I could do a larger volume of them compared with the number of articles I would need to do for the same dollar value.
I agree.
So I think I need to focus less on new article clients and really push for white paper clients or even case study clients.
Yeah. So what you're really asking is, the way I'm hearing it, Jessica, is, hey, I am about to hit like maximum capacity again. This is the calm before the storm. I don't have resources yet to help me handle this capacity. You know, what do I do? And really, when you think about it, there are only two ways. you can either bring those resources in, but let's face it, there's an onboarding period, right? Even with your VA, if you can give him or her a couple of things right off the bat, that definitely helps. But, you know, your writer is not going to be, you know, at 100% on day one, even week one or week two. So that's it's limited. It's going to take longer. It's an investment. The other thing you can do is change what you go after and bring in so that you maximize your internal hourly rate, if you will. Because at the end of the day, that's what we're talking about, right? It's you're not necessarily looking for more clients or more projects. You're looking to earn more in less time. And I completely agree. White papers, it's kind of like it's the reverse of blog posts, where blog posts take a long time to kind of get into. And in the there's kind of a ceiling as to what you can charge. White papers, even if you spent a lot of time putting together a great white paper, you can charge enough that your internal hourly rate is going to be pretty high. So it does make more sense to start shifting in that direction.
Yeah, so I'm going to switch my warm emailing to focus more on that.
Okay.
The last tactic I had, I think I mentioned, was I looked specifically for top project management blogs because it helped me find companies that I knew did contact marketing. But they're looking for blogs. They're not looking for white papers. So I think I need to switch that a bit. But really for help, I see it more that I just need, you know, the Facebook chat for the ad hoc kind of advice as things come up. I'm not sure there's anything else that I really need right now.
Okay. And, of course, you know, that's always happy to help you there. Absolutely. I'm curious about one thing, because you're growing really quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think about when we first engaged, where you were then or where you are now, things have changed fast. In terms of, especially now that you're looking to bring in a couple of people, what is your cash flow situation like? I mean, will you have some margin, or is there a high risk that you're going to be, you know, very quickly kind of in a pickle if let's say a client pays you late, or a client that looked promising suddenly disappears? So tell me about that situation. How's it looking?
I have about a month buffer. So
okay.
My largest client pays me on the 5th of the month, and that normally gives me the money that I need to cover all of my main expenses for the following month. And then the stuff that I make during the month from the other clients is, it's not all gravy. Some of it I need, but it's not, I could survive for a while without it if it dried up. So if I suddenly lost all of my work today, I'd be fine for all of August. I might be in trouble by September 1st-ish, maybe.
So but knowing you, you'd find something tomorrow.
Yeah, I can, and I'm always trying to look ahead. The white paper client, you know, my test article is going to be done my test paper will be done by the end of this week. If that goes well, then I have at least 4 more, if not 9 more, between now and the end of the year. The new blog client is, they want 35 articles between now and the end of the year. I'm trying to find, I don't look for one-offs, because I want that consistency, the reliability of income.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
but I do find there are definitely delays in payments. It takes them longer. The larger the client is, the slower they seem to be to pay.
Well, so a couple of ideas. One of them is always get a deposit on the first project from a new client, 50%, you know, unless it's a massive project. In those cases, massive projects that take longer, I'll usually do progress payments or, you know, milestone payments of some kind. But always get a deposit. That will do two things. First of all, it will help you make sure you have a serious – that's like the ultimate filter to make sure you got a serious client. Number two, it's going to help you with cash flow. And, of course, number three is the obvious one. It lowers your risk. And the other thing is your terms. What are your payment terms? 30 days, 15 days? What do you ask for?
I ask for 15, but this most recent client, they basically said our terms are 30 and we don't negotiate.
Okay. So guys, here's what I do with payment terms. I ask for, my payment terms are net 15, and I invoice either the balance due after the deposit, if it's a first time client, or if it's a regular client, I invoice for the work 1 week after submitting the initial draft. Okay, so you may have seen my article about this on Sunday. Always tie your payment to the deliverable, not to the client's ability to get their act together. Okay, so that's the first thing. That's really going to help your cash flow because you have no control over when the client will actually, you know, get things together to finalize the project. It could take weeks, it could take months. Number two, ask for the best case scenario. I learned a long time ago that it's just best to ask for net 15 when I do invoice. And guess what? Many clients will go ahead and pay you in 15 days. If you ask for 30, nobody's going to pay you in 15. So best case scenario, just go ahead and ask for it. And if they say, like in your case, Jessica, you know, it's not going to happen, we don't do anything 30 days, that's fine. But then negotiate and say, no problem, my terms are net 15. I can make that work. However, I would need to invoice, you know, when I start the work or the day I submit the initial draft. You see what I'm saying? So don't, in those cases, don't wait like I just showed you 1 week after submitting the initial draft. Then treat it as a concession. Hey, my terms are net 15. You're saying you can't do that. You got to do 30. Fine. I will concede there. However, you have to concede or ask that you concede on this, that you go ahead and let me submit my invoice at this time and then just push it through since it's going to take 30 days.
Okay.
And so here's something to consider, Jessica. I just uploaded some training on cash flow management that I think might help you. Now, you know, it's up to you. I think you still said that you're not quite at capacity right now, that it's about to, that storm's about to hit. Do you have time to kind of go through and explore this system?
I'm not sure. I mean, the biggest thing, the only reason I don't have a larger buffer is just because I'm so new and I'm growing so rapidly. I have an accounting background. I'm actually a certified professional accountant and a certified management accountant. So cash flow is sort of something I just, you know, live and breathe.
Gotcha. Cool. Then do what you're doing. If you ever get in a situation where once you get a couple of people in, you're just trying to, you know, juggle those plates, and if you're looking for some more ideas, then let me know, and I can point you to it. I implemented the system a few months ago, actually a few years ago, but the newest iteration of it was a few months ago, and it's made a huge difference in my business. So that goes out to for all you guys. If you're in a situation where, you know, you're trying to figure out the cash flow in a very variable business like ours, then let me know and I can point you to that. Okay, well, just let me know, Jessica, as you move through this, let me know where I can help, okay? And again, I suggest taking a look at this worksheet every 30 days or so. It won't take you long, as you can tell, but it will It's just a very mindful way of refocusing and making sure that you're on track, and just to identify any potential areas where might need to focus in or get some help on.
Yeah, I found it really useful because it made me put it in black and white. You know, what are my struggles? What am I going to do? What are my next steps? So I think having those clear actions outlined like that helped, because sometimes I get that post on Monday, what are the three things you're going to do this week? And I don't, it's almost like it's the first things that come to mind. It's not necessarily planned in advance. And I think getting into that structure is something that I struggle with a bit, just because things are changing so rapidly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad it was helpful. I want to point out a couple of things I just saw in the chat. One is Jessica had posted for Jack a couple of links that might be helpful. She says, Neil Patel is my favorite resource for digital marketing. He has two different articles on gamification. This is great. Thank you, Jessica. Good stuff. Chris says, I just had a LinkedIn prospect move to a lead during our call. She responded to my connection request and wants some samples. That's awesome. We should do these calls more often, right, Chris? Little juju. Blake says, oh, this is interesting. Blake says that his payment terms are due on receipts. Now, Blake, I'm curious, when do you go ahead and submit the invoice? Do you submit it when you first start work, when you submit the initial draft, when you finalize the project? Because that definitely makes a difference, right? So let me know. I'm curious. Blake says 50% to start. And I'm curious, is that with all clients, even recurring clients? And then 50% upon submission of initial draft, right, Blake? Okay, yes, he said so. 50% to start, 50% upon submission of initial draft, and you do that for all clients, not just new clients. See, it goes to show, guys, there's no, you know, I think one of the things that helped me when I was starting in this business was I didn't come to this business with baggage, and I don't think you guys either, but I've come across a lot of people who've been doing this for a long time, and it's interesting when people hang out with the same crowd, they start believing the same things that crowd believes. And I found that a lot of journalists, a lot of kind of established freelancers have these preconceived notions and beliefs about what's acceptable, what the standards are. And I found, first of all, I was just too ignorant. I didn't care to ask. So, and I found that I wasn't getting much resistance. You're going to get the same amount of resistance no matter what your terms are, okay? So that's something to keep in mind. No matter what, some people are going to resist. You could have the most generous terms ever, and you're still going to find resistance. So might as well start with what you would like, kind of the ideal scenario, and start there. It can't hurt to ask. When I started asking for 15 days, I just thought that was reasonable, and most of my clients were paying me 15 days, sometimes 20, you know, with something like that. But you're not going to get it in 15 days if you ask for 30 days. And then if you're too generous with your terms and not bill until the project is finalized. Jack says, Chris, why are you multitasking during the meeting? Just kidding. Congratulations. That's awesome. All right, guys. So let's, as we wrap up, just like to go around the virtual room. And I'm curious what your biggest takeaway was from today's call, or a big takeaway. It doesn't have to be the biggest. Was there something that resonated with you, something that was kind of an aha, something that you jotted down as, hey, I got to do this or implement it? Just let me know in the chat area, big takeaway from today. And while you're at it, let me know what your top action item is going to be. For the rest of this week, what is based on today or based on what you decided earlier this week or based on some training you're going through, What is the one thing, and give me something that wasn't already kind of on your to-do list, you know, something that you know you're going to do anyway. Give me something that, you know what, this is something that I need to push myself to do. This is an action item I've added because it's important, and if left to my own devices, I'm not going to do it. Chris says, content is a delivery mechanism for your name. That's a big takeaway. Cool. And Jack said the same thing. Fantastic. Blake says, action item, pay for LinkedIn. That will get me started. Absolutely. Blake, you know what? You could do the free trial. So if you're on the free version right now, go to the premium there on the top right, I believe, and do a 30-day free trial. My recommendation is pick the level you think you might stick to when you go into paid mode, once they start charging you. There's two schools of thought. One says start with all the way, go with Sales Navigator because it's going to have the most granular search capabilities and it's got the CRM built into it. Others say, you know what, Business Premium is enough. You have to decide. It's a $20 a month difference. I'm still playing around with Sales Navigator. I really don't have an opinion either way right now. Action item for Jack, write more quick content. Yes, love it. Chris, action item, I want to augment my LinkedIn prospecting with strategic LinkedIn posts and revive my Q&A authority document. Perfect. Jessica says, action item, start warm email exclusively for case studies and white papers. Fantastic. And Jessica, go where they're already doing them, okay? So as you're prospecting, as you're sending warm emails, focus on prospects that are already publishing this stuff. You know, the wise man once told me, if you sell watches, market to people who already own watches. Preferably, they own several watches already. Those are going to be your best buyers. Don't try to market watches to people who don't wear watches. Jessica says, I started by Googling project management white papers. There you go. Make it easy. You'll have more prospects in your search than you'll have time to go after. All right, guys, good stuff. Great call today. Let's keep this conversation going in the Facebook forum. And again, I'm here for you. Let me know wherever I can help you. The Q&A thread, there's one every week. We're going to be meeting in Zoom starting next week. So be on the lookout for instructions on that. Just letting you know because everything will change. So in the training portal, the call pages, the emails, it will be new stuff. So if you have the old page bookmarked for whatever reason, that's not going to work. And if you haven't gone through the ROI Maximizer, make sure to take 20-30 minutes to go through that, think through the worksheet questions, and then start making this part of your 30-day review cycle as we work together. You guys have a great rest of the day, and we'll talk again real soon. Take care.